You're listening to the Shared Security Show, exploring the trust you put in people and technology with your hosts, Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 246 of the Shared Security Show. And joining me this week is a man who thinks he's Mickey Mouse, co-host Kevin Johnson.
This is some Mickey Mouse podcast or something.
I don't know who this guy is. I don't know what's going on here. But and also, I'd like to welcome someone who is going to battle in the Canadian winter, co-host Scott Wright.
Ah, yes. Perfect.
Happy Perfect. Halloween. This is the Halloween edition.
Well, I have costumes.
I'm dressing up as a podcast host.
I'm going out skiing after.
And you're going skiing and you're going to Disney World. So for those of you that not on the YouTube or watching us on YouTube, Kevin has a Mickey Mouse hat and Scott is dressed for battle and I am dressed like I usually am as a podcast host. So,
I was going to say you're a pumpkin.
I am a pumpkin.
You're a pumpkin.
Sure, fine. I'll take
that. Is that an orange? I just assumed it was a very bright red.
It's red.
Yeah, it looks a little orange. This is an orange shirt.
Give me a break. I'm colorblind. All right.
Oh, okay.
Are you really?
Not only am I handicapped by being Canadian, I'm colorblind.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried? All seriousness, I'm curious. Have you ever looked at those glasses that supposedly help colorblind people see color?
I have not. My wife would like me to try them. She says, you know, you're missing out on so much. I don't want to know what I'm missing out on. Once I have them, I'm never going to want to go back.
Take them off.
That's right.
I can see that.
I can see that all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, why don't we start talking about cybersecurity and privacy? We have some interesting stories this week. And the first one, just being a little biased, but I did recently speak about some survey results that I was working on with my company, Bishop Fox, about a survey that we sent out to about 300 ethical hackers about how they break into companies. And I don't know if anyone from Secure Ideas took that, Kevin. You may have. Somebody may have.
I don't think any of us saw it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it was publicized on the internet and it was in partnership with SANS. But yeah, I mean, we had a lot of people take it, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. I always find it funny, though, when you say ethical hackers, because, you know, ethics are personal. All hackers are ethical. We just may not like what they did. It's their ethics they're following, though.
That's a great way to put that. Yeah. I like that. But we found some interesting statistics, found that, you know, more than 60% of those surveyed, they can actually exfiltrate data in less than 5 hours. There was, also some stats we pulled out about, you know, 40%, we can essentially break into an environment more often than not, if not always. Right. And then when we do break in, we can do that in 5 hours or less. Those are kind of the big highlights. What's also interesting is that we found that us hackers like to use social engineering and phishing as our number one attack vector. No surprise there. That result in success that very much matches up to what we see out in the wild, right? We've talked about this many times, of course. But the other piece of this that was interesting, and we've had some really good conversations with, you know, our clients and just on this webinar about how it really emphasizes the need for protecting or detecting attackers when they're on your network, because ultimately everyone's going to get hacked eventually. And it just comes down to how quickly can you respond to that attack? Because there's so many ways and attack vectors that you have to protect, an organization has to protect themselves from, it becomes very difficult. So I'm just interested in your take in these results. I think they're kind of interesting.
I think they're interesting. I feel like it's rude to say none of it surprised me, because that implies it was, and I don't mean this as like it was a useless survey or anything like that. I just like, everything I said, like, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. That's exactly what I'm seeing here. We, as a matter of fact, you know, it's funny. If I had answered the survey, I would say that I don't use social engineering to get in, because in most cases, we tell our customer that that's a waste of their money, because that's, we know we will. Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. Right. We just start with the assumed compromise breach. Because, like, that's look, true. If you want me to test it, I'll test it, and you can pay me for mm-hmm. that and everything else like that. But we don't tend to do it because our customers know their people are going to click stuff. You know, we've talked about this a million times. The thing I would like to see, here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see another survey of people who were breached and see how similar the results are. Because we all say we're trying to emulate what an attacker would do, right? Like that kind of stuff. I'd like to see that confirmed. I know that in the breaches I've worked, in the incidents I've worked, we are mimicking what attackers are doing, right? Like, but that doesn't mean I'm right. That just means my experience says that's that. So, Bishop Fox should do that survey too.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that we've had that as some feedback as well, as like a follow up to this that might be interesting to see. But yeah, it was really good just to see kind of these results. And we also had survey, you know, in the survey, and we'll have links to where you can download that if you're interested in seeing more of this data. You know, we of course asked the skill and how long they've been doing pen testing, and you can kind of match up that data as well, which is also kind of interesting. So. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm fascinated. I've been, you know, you and I talked about before we started recording. I'm traveling quite a bit right now, conference to conference. And what has fascinated me is to see how many people are trying to get into the industry and where they're coming from. Right. Like that's been kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has. So great. So Scott, we prepare for battle here, let's get into our next segment, which is Aware Much.
Yes, indeed. If only I knew which story I was supposed to be talking about, because I think you stole the one that you said was going to be the Aware Much con.
Scam Nation.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I thought it was the Scam Nation one.
Yeah. Oh, Scam Nation.
The texting scams that seem to not stop and
texting
have evolved.
Scams, yeah, they certainly continue to evolve. And texting is really one of those very difficult things to teach people about, in terms of how to spot them, what to do about them, how to avoid them, etc. But yeah, this story is pretty sort of, I don't know, what they call it, apocryphal. Or, you know, how, you know, there's really no hope after all is said and done. You know, the scam guys are going to be there evolving, as we said. As we patch one hole, another one opens up. But when it comes to, I think, the awareness side of things, we really don't have a lot of tools. And, you know, it's why ClickArmor sponsors this section of the podcast. In fact, I was just doing a webinar, and this is another plug for the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum that we do every 2 weeks now, just doing one on social engineering. And we talked about texting and how difficult it is. You know, you can't use live phishing tests to test for SMS attacks. You can't do it the way attackers do. And so, you know, what I will sort of share in this segment is that we use scenario-based learning within the ClickArmor platform, so that when you want to simulate an SMS attack, you put people in a context. You know, Helen's out for lunch, walking along, she gets a text message from Phil in marketing, and it says, hey, you got a minute? And she has no reason to say no. But, you know, then he says, you know, I need you to go buy some gift cards. And, you know, if she's smart enough, you know, maybe she gets an option to say, hey, can you call me? And we could talk about it. Or she has another option to do something else that might not give her the information she needs. But if she asks if he'll call me, and he says, sorry, I can't, I'm too busy, then she should really just stop and say, yeah, sorry, if I can't confirm it's you, then I'm out of here, right? And we can do that within the scenarios within ClickArmor. So that, I was just going to say, those kinds of SMS-based attacks are going to need some kind of scenario-based learning for people to understand what to spot, you know, what to look for when they're in real life.
Yeah.
So
I think the two takeaways, and we'll have this article linked in the show notes. I thought it was actually really good. Just talking about traditional types of SMS phishing have been easily identifiable, right? Because you're like, oh, look at this message. Yeah. I'm not clicking on that. No way. That's a scam. But now they're taking an approach of just sending you a message and saying something like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Literally, just a question like that. Yeah. Or do you know what you've done? And it, or, you know, something very short and a question that elicits an emotional response from you. Yeah. To say, wait, man, who is this person?
Yeah.
And it's very easy to get lost in the moment and just reply and say, what do you mean? Who are you?
Yeah.
You know, do you have the right number? Like,
as soon as they touch the right buttons, right? Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the article we talked about a few months ago on the Psychology Today, right? Where the therapist who should know better can be manipulated with a couple of questions or, you know, and threatening that they're going to lose their license to practice. And all of a sudden their mindset changes completely and they can't spot it. Yep. And they said they were like hypnotized, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same technique.
I think the other thing I think is important that comes out of the article is, you know, and you know, the related article that not actually replying to these things, not feeding the beast. I think it's imperative to point out carriers know the fraudulent numbers, right? Or at least they know what numbers are being reported as fraudulent, and they're doing nothing to actually stop the calls, right? And the Federal Trade Commission here in the U.S. just finally voted 4-0, according to the article, to ask the providers.
To ask them first.
They should be required to block the numbers. Not, hey, can you do this? It's like, should you be required? Because I'll be blunt. If I was the provider, I'd be like, no, I shouldn't be required to do that. Because they make money from those numbers.
That's right.
They make money from these calls. That's not going to stop at all. But if you said to the carriers, do not deliver known fraudulent messages.
Yeah.
Right?
That's the table stakes, right? That should be what they should be doing as a minimum.
That's the bare minimum. Yeah.
And the only thing they've done, and that was that one act in 2019, Stir Shaken, I think it's called, where we mentioned this in the show before too, is you get these call, you know, on the caller ID, it'll say scam likely. Like, we're starting to see that, but that doesn't stop the call. All it does is put for a spoof number.
Yes.
Scam likely. You could still pick up the phone. They could still leave a voice message.
Like, well, and it drives me crazy. They don't even give me the option to say, if you think this is a spam call, just don't let them leave a message.
Correct.
Or hey, I got this other idea.
Yeah.
How about you make the phone ring and don't allow people to go right to voicemail? The number of times I get a notification, hey, you have a voicemail. Every one of those voicemails is a scam. I've never gotten a legitimate voicemail that went straight to voicemail, right?
Yeah. Well, there's some things you can do depending on, you know, the phone that you have. I know Android has some settings, but they're a little bit like Apple has that setting where you can block all unknown calls or basically send all unknown calls to voicemail. And I actually had that turned on for a little bit, but I actually found legitimate calls that I was waiting for, whether from like a doctor or, you know, something else, would go to voicemail. I'm like, God damn it. I can't win.
And let's be clear. I don't want it to go to voicemail. Yeah. I don't check my voicemail. I hate Oh man, it drives me crazy.
Yeah. I wonder if let's suppose in some magical world the phone companies do start blocking calls coming from known spam or numbers. Is the next step then that they will use SIM card swapping to do these things?
Probably. So
you're actually calling from a legitimate.
But I'll guarantee you that if they go with SIM swapping or some other means, it's going to be harder for them to do.
Oh, yeah.
Right now, they send up these dialers and they just dial out.
Yeah.
And there's no issue at all, right?
No threshold, yeah.
Yeah. Let's raise the bar. And the people who are not raising the bar are literally making money because they're not raising the bar. Right. This is a case where and, you know, I think anybody who's listened to me before knows I am a greedy capitalist. I want to make as much money as possible. Right. I want to go to space.
America.
Yeah. this is where if any provider said to me, hey, you know what we've done? We've done what we can to protect. I would switch every single person I'm responsible. You want to work for security as you're required to use that provider. Why? Because they're doing the right thing. Like, use it as a marketing tool. I'd watch that marketing.
Yeah. All right. Well, Scott, any other last plugs for ClickArmor?
Just, I'd love to encourage people to go to clickarmor.ca/CSAF for Cybersecurity Awareness Forum. That's where we have the bi-weekly live panel discussions with audience Q&A. Just finished one a few minutes ago on social engineering. The next one will be on working from home. How do we get people to work more securely from home?
Nice.
So you can sign up there and you'll be able to join in. If you want to be a panelist, let us know. We have a really nice cross-section of panelists from different industries, different geographical locations. So it's quite fun, and people get a lot of value out of it. So hope to see people on the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum next time on October 19th.
All right. So our last story, 8 strange ways employees can accidentally expose data. I'll just start by saying I find some of these a little bit funny.
They're not all that strange.
I mean, they're not all that strange. Some of them I was like, a little iffy there.
I would argue that many of them were iffy.
Yeah, let's talk about a few of them. One in particular, the eyeglass reflections expose screen data on video conferencing calls.
Yes.
Now, yeah, I don't wear glasses.
I do.
So I can't speak. But Kevin, do you see this?
I can see Kevin's screen right now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have the administrator password to every single thing that is sensitive in the world right now.
Kevin's got the Slack up. Yep. All his passwords. Right? His password manager. There it is.
Yeah.
It's all there.
So to prevent that, I got new glasses that are like anti-glare. Ooh. So people can't see.
See, I had the anti-glare stuff, and I felt like the glasses were dirty all the time. Like, that they attracted, like it was a dust magnet. Things would, like, fly at my face when I had them.
Yep. What else is on the list, Tom?
Yeah, that first one is stupid.
Yeah, the first two we all know about, we've talked about many, many times. You know, the LinkedIn career updates trigger SMS phishing attacks. Yeah. We just covered that actually recently, in a recent episode.
Not long ago.
The social media messaging app pictures reveal sensitive background info, you know, so people taking pictures of themselves with their lanyard, with their, you know, access card, you know, in full plain view, things like that.
That's one of those double-edged sword things, right? Where the law enforcement often uses that to catch bad guys.
They absolutely do. Absolutely do. The data ingestion script mistypes result in incorrect database use. That one's a little strange. I get it. It's somebody types in like a wrong IP address, right? And then that ends up in a database and then it exposes somebody else's information or...
That's just a mistake.
That's basically.
I mean, for as long as I've been around, we've had development environments. I was working for a company that had to pay out money to their providers because they submitted test claims to production instead of the other way around. And that happens.
Yep. And the last couple ones here, certificate transparency logs expose sensitive data. I don't know how much I would see that one unless that's something that's
newer. Probably something that will happen more and more often, but there is a way around that, right? You can use a sort of abstracted certificates, right? Mm-hmm. Where they call them.
I mean, that's going to be a very specific person.
Yes.
Is being targeted by that, right? I am the certificate admin. I'm the one putting in the request. You know, that and I would hope that if you're putting in those requests, if you're part of those logs, you're a more aware user.
It actually reminds me of I was listening to the Dark Web Diaries not long ago, and they were talking about, it was the episode with SIM swappers and other things. And they were talking about how, you know, some guys in the cryptocurrency world worth tons of money are using, you know, like Google Sheets to store their lists of investors and stuff, right? It's like easy. I'd say that should be on the list, right?
Yeah, and shared links. Absolutely. that are open to, you know, anybody that has that link, because we see all the times like, oh, well, who's going to be able to access this link if I don't give it to them?
Yeah.
Well, that link can leak out sometimes through other means. And
yeah,
now everybody has that link.
May not get indexed, but somebody will share it.
The last couple ones, USB, innocent USB hardware, right? Rubber duckies and all those things.
You buy Chinese knockoff things and they have a malware on them. Yes.
Those things. Discarded office printers that have like hard-coded Wi-Fi credentials. You know, that one, I actually would change that out to like hard drives found on eBay.
Yeah.
When you sell
equipment. I was going to say.
More of a problem than
then like it wouldn't local fit the Wi-Fi strange, passwords. Or what's the other headline word? Strange or unusual?
But I mean, like the printer one, I mean, if we're going to talk about printers, what about the full laptop people are giving away? You know, like,
yeah,
I bought a new laptop. And so I gave, you know, I know that when I was at American Express, we had, you know, every year they would do a auction and, you know, staff members could buy equipment that was being put and all that money went to charity, right? Like that's how they did it, right? You know, we have this equipment, we're replacing it, but instead of throwing it out, we're going to sell it at a ridiculously low price, but then we're going to give the money to charity. And we had this massive process to ensure that data did not reside on those machines. And yet at least twice that I know of in the public events, right? This is not Kevin saying, oh, look at this. Drives were missed. You know, that somebody picked it up. That it's like the next one, right? The somebody emails sensitive data to themselves at home. Yes, that's bad. That really seemed like an ad for the company that was talking about it.
That actually did.
Yeah. Like I saw this guy email a spreadsheet to do training. Yeah, we know. Like
so maybe we'll come up with our own top eight.
I like it.
I like that. That's what we'll do. And it'll be not tied.
And you can do some sound effects with them, Tom.
I could do sound effects.
Yeah, yeah, Tom's got some really cool sound effects. Privacy sucks. We're going to die.
Yeah, stuff like that. Exactly.
Hey, that's not a good sound effect. No? I lied. I said you had good sound effects.
People thought that was funny, Kevin. Oh, wow. I don't know.
Oh, man.
We have a lot more audience listeners than I thought we did.
Yes, we do. Yes,
live studio audience. with italics and quotes around live.
Yes. Well, let's end this episode before it gets any worse. So
Good plan.
But thank you both. Thank you for the headdresses this episode. It's an early Halloween treat for our listeners. And hopefully, again, this is also a great opportunity. If you have not subscribed to us on YouTube, please do so you can see all the fun hats that we like to wear. Not every episode, but we'll surprise you. Who knows what Halloween is going to have in store? So check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, of course, if you're listening to this on your favorite podcast app. Much appreciated. And until next time, we will talk to all of you again next week. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, subscribe on your favorite podcast listening app, or leave us a rating and review. To catch all the latest from the show, visit our website, sharedsecurity.net, for all show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter at SharedSec, and join our Reddit community on the Shared Security Show subreddit. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week for another episode of the Shared Security Show.